Weird Things is brought to you by patreon.com/weirdthings. Support the show.
Things podcast. I'm Andrew Mean, joined by Justin Robert Young.
Hello.
And our brand new engineer today, Mr. Brian Brushwood.
Oh man, crushing it as always. On time. That's why we're streaming live. And smartly, I'm only doing one recording because that'll always work out well.
We're at the point that if the recording gets lost, is we'll use some large language model to just generate our podcast anyways. We've got enough episodes. We just feed it today's news and it's done.
I'll tell you what, man. We've touched on this before, but that whole idea of like increased fidelity of quality of lenses and microphones and so on versus the increased quality of AIs to interpolate and fill in the gaps, like, very quickly, I just feel like you're going to be able to vaguely describe so-and-so meets blah, 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 and just an entire hour and a half long movie will pop out.
I think you could do that right now if you were clever with how you use your data and your AI models. I think that's doable now. You know, I without getting too into the weeds here, like, you know, one of the things that I'll do is I'll go work with, help companies out that are trying to figure out how to apply some of these models and stuff. And I would say, generally speaking, they're just right now just sort of tapping the sort of the surface of it, doing things they did before, but using a model for it. They're trying to do more creative stuff, but sometimes it's way more ambitious. But I'm like, if you build it in layers, if you use it to do this and then do that, you can do the thing. And so it's all moving very fast.
It's amazing. I think in general, I've remained pretty immune to the fear of robots coming to take our jobs. But, as now we get into the creative arts, I get a little bit, just a little bit fidgety. And I'm aware logically that, you know, step one is nobody could take my job. Step two is, well, I guess maybe they could do this part of my job. And step three is, I'm so glad that robots took over that old job and I do the new job now.
I think that you're right about the different stages of denial about how technology will affect things. The time frame is always going to be off. I have no better chance at guessing what's going to be the right time frame than anybody else. Also, we're here doing a thing in a world where the internet was going to destroy television and old media, and it certainly impacted it. But now we have terms like YouTubers and TikTokers and all these other things, and it's still more people going in front of cameras and doing things for people, more people doing that thing than there were before. So, you know, this is what the closest analogy to what we're doing now would have been like public access 40 years ago.
Yeah.
So, Go ahead.
There was a clip that we watched on last week's Great Night program where it was religious in nature and it was on Twitch, but it was the type of programming that in my youth you would always associate it with cable access television. And you could tell that this pastor was like leaning into it because his overlays were intentionally like Amiga style call now, call in live overlays on there. So it's like, it's one of those, the more things change, the more they stay the same type of deals.
Yeah. Yeah. We're always going to be drawn to personalities, and I don't doubt the ability for AI to create a personality, but there is that when you found out that, you know, going back in time, Milli Vanilli lip synced or faked, that was upsetting to people. That was like, what, you know? And it's like, well, I guess a lot of people, it's like a lot of the, it's not even favorite singers. They have backup singers and other people who reinforce the vocals, but it just, sometimes we just want a thing to do a thing. It's fine. Sometimes we want a person, you know, if you look at like you put on our refrigerator, we put photos that we took or drawings our children made, and they're not really great, but they mean something. So
speaking of replicating authenticity through digital magic, Andrew, have you seen the most recent episode of Boba Fett?
So a curious thing happens when you go out there and you go use 25-year-old face matching technology and you get lambasted by it, and then you go hire a YouTuber who knows how to use the latest deep fake technology to work for your company, and then you go do, then you go do it, and maybe you overdo it. But yes, they, you know, they've hired what's his name, the YouTuber who was doing the really great deep fakes. He went to go work for ILM, and it shows.
And shockingly, for those who have not watched it with limited spoilers, there was a character for whom was de-aged in the last season of The Mandalorian that shows up in this season of Boba Fett. And boy, howdy, is there a marked difference in terms of the quality.
Yeah, Shamook, that's the guy on Twitter and the YouTuber who does. I follow his channel. He'll do that periodically, deepfakes different people. So he went to go work for ILM. And the funny thing is, and he's very good at what he does, to the software he's using, as far as I understand, anybody could go to GitHub and download deepfake. I mean, that's what people don't realize. Like, this is publicly available software. You just have to be a little bit technically inclined to use it. And that was the frustrating thing when I watched that episode of Mandalorian, was like, it's not like it's some, you've got to go to MIT and talk to some professor or something. You literally got to do a Google search for this, have somebody that knows Python and maybe a little bit of image tech, and you're good.
Well, and it's one of those things where, again, it takes, you know, months and months for production to happen. There's machinations behind the scene where there's somebody in middle management. I can imagine being in a tough spot where it's like, okay, I know for sure I'll be safe if I use the technology that we spent $25 million developing that was used in Rogue One. Nobody will fire me over that. I could get fired if I just shrug it off and use this off-the-shelf open source software and this talent I found on YouTube.
I think that in some cases true, but I don't think they're even aware, because it's not, it takes you 12 hours on a desktop PC to do what they did. It's fast. It would have been, hey, I'm going to do this. I don't think they knew. I think you're sometimes right. If it was a longer pipeline, yeah, it would be a dumb chance. I think they were completely unaware that that was a method out there. And I think I know a little about the internals of ILM. And I know that some of there's like, well, this is the way that I do this. And we have an expert and we're going to charge you this much to do this. This is the budget to go do this. There's not a lot of, hey, we could probably pay $3,000 and get this done in 3 days.
And just to unironically, unabashedly, without restrictions whatsoever, I want to sing the praises of how quickly in that episode I forgot, like it just straight up was time travel to when this person was younger. And I found myself totally lost in it. It was great.
I was so lost in the fact that the character was real that I went straight to him being boring and wanting him to do something interesting.
It is a really great 18 minutes crammed into 50.
Yes. As a matter of fact, what's funny is my family has not been watching Boba Fett, but I have, and I found the need to show them.
Have you let them know that it's no longer the Boba Fett show?
That's exactly what I did. Is I showed them last week's episode, and they're like, "This is great," and I was like, "Well, I was convinced that the next there's no way there was going to be two episodes in a row without the titular character, and then the next episode definitely didn't have the titular character.
Yeah, had a cameo featuring Boba Fett. It'd be like if halfway through the Jeffersons, they're like, yeah, we're just going to focus on Archie Bunker. Like, he just seems more interesting.
And the Boba Fett show, whenever they cut to him, like, remember on a Bantha, and how slow, how horrible transportation, it's sometimes how it feels like, da 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 da. Now, 5 minutes of a Bantha walking. We're literally going to make you a cot to take a nap on because this is going to take a while. And they literally make a character a cot to nap on because it's going to take a while. And I before this, like one of my biggest crits of like Rise of Skywalker is like the most after the training montage in Empire Strikes Back, never do another Jedi training montage again because they are boring and they suck and they just don't. They're a waste. They're a waste of time. Unless you have something super clever to go do. Because otherwise, it's like literally watching a Udemy class at half speed.
Yeah. But after watching this episode, your opinion was...
Oh, am I right?
Right again, Maine, he said as he checked a gigantic box that said right.
Well, I'm going to talk about where I was wrong in a little bit, but it goes back to like, Andrew, please tell us why you hate the hero's journey. Hero's journey is a wonderful way to explain ancient narratives and stuff, but it's corrupted the minds of people trying to write genre stuff. When Lucas made Star Wars and he didn't understand its success, he was baffled by it, partially because, I don't know, you had a great editor, Marshall Lucas. You had people like Brian De Palma and other people giving you really great input and helping you shape this thing into something wonderful. And then Empire Strikes Back comes along and you bring in a great director and you don't get it. You don't understand why people like it. And then you're like, the hero's journey is the thing. People become fixated on the hero's journey. And that's sort of the problem, is that we get this, we got to show them learning these things, enjoy learning these things and stuff. And it's like, yeah, kind of get away with that once, then we're done.
Well, I think it's like you really just need to follow what's true to the character and what's interesting to the character. And that's really where I think the greatest artists understand and kind of mind meld with their audience to know, like, what's the most interesting thing that could happen? It's what, you know, the Matt Stone and Trey Parker, like their famous lecture on and then versus like because of, I think is
right. I think the takeaway is they go through an entire script and anytime the word and appears, they replaces it with but. So that you break expectations instead of create a string of this happened and then this happened and then this happened.
Well, becomes, no, I think it wasn't necessarily breaking expectations, but it's everything has to be earned. So it's like the next scene happens because a thing happens, as opposed to, and then another thing happens. It's not like they went to McDonald's and then they went to Radio Shack because that's a boring day out. They went to McDonald's and then they were robbed, so they had to go to the police station.
Right, right. It's the and but therefore, where it's like, well, they went to McDonald's, but they got robbed. Therefore, they went to Radio Shack.
Yeah.
I always think it's like every chapter or every scene is a conflict, and the outcome of that conflict changes affects the next scene. And bad writing is you feel like the writer already set out these things and they just ping pong their characters through it. Strong writing is in that, so and that in where the character is in each moment affects how they're going to make a decision.
And I think there are some opportunities where you are ahead of the story, but it benefits it because there's a moment of dread or expectation or something that you are, you know, if two characters that have been estranged for a long time, it becomes telegraphed that this is going to be a meeting that happens, that can build dread or anticipation.
But it should also build the opportunity for surprise.
Exactly.
Because if it plays out exactly like you expect it to, it's fine to know things are going to collide. You just can't know the outcome, because we can watch things over and over again. The outcome has to feel unpredictable from the point of view of characters. Because I get into this a lot where people go like, this is cliche or this. It's like, is it for the character? Based on the character knows, because we rewatch stuff all the time and we enjoy it. How can we enjoy it if we know what happens? It's because from the character, we believe the character, and that character doesn't know what's going to happen.
Well, and there's a similar experience that I think is much more universal now than it was 20 or 30 years ago, which is the sharing of a single nugget of content that you either saw on TikTok or whatever, like somehow it's on your radar, but not theirs. Like you've already seen it. You're not rewatching it so that you can experience it. You're rewatching it so you can see it through the eyes of the person that you're sharing it with.
Oh, how many times did you do a magic trick for somebody and at a party and they're like, go show my friend, and like, I won't watch, just show it to them.
Right.
And you're like, why? Cause they, and that, like, that's, yeah, exactly. That's an experience. They want to watch that vicariously, see that person's reaction. Which a lot of drama and stuff, I don't think we realize how much that plays into things.
But, if you want to see this show through fresh eyes, then you want to share it with other people,
then introduce it to someone else, period. End of sentence, new paragraph. But if you want to give us money, you can head on over to patreon.com/weirdthings. At patreon.com/weirdthings, you have a web portal for which you can enter in a credit card and give us money. PayPal is also accepted.
is also accepted.
Head on over there. You can get early access to the After Things podcast. You can make sure that we do this show even when Bryce is just flitting around the country, jet setting like some sort of Kardashian, having himself a hell of a time.
I'll be the first to say that we respect our audio elders and that we want him to do well.
He's with his family. He's screwing off. He's a Kardashian in my book. Bryce Kardashian. Enough of him. Boo.
Patreon.com/weirdthings.
Can we finally talk about Bryce now that he's not here and he's totally not going to listen to
it? Let's get into it with this layabout.
Bryce is like plastic. You don't appreciate it. Then you look around and how many things work because of plastic.
Everything is falling apart in the 5 minutes that he's been gone. This is the community darkest timeline gif. Like somebody is swinging a flaming towel. Donald Glover is running in with pizza. Chevy Chase is dying on the floor. It is a total poop show.
Do we need air? What does air really do, guys? I can't see it.
We are worthless infantile children that are now unsupervised and running with knives. There is only a matter of time before all of us are gone.
Bryce, come
back. please, for the love of Jehoshaphat.
All right, so you know who could use a Bryce or a few Brycey right now?
Who's that?
Bryce-I. What's the plural of Bryce? Bry.
Brycus.
Bryces. Brycey's pieces.
Right in. Let us know. Rocketry is hard, guys. I've learned this. And I had one story about a rocket mishap today, but then another rocket sort of mishap happened today. And it's not, and I don't want to knock this company at all because it's just, it's normal course of business. But the company Astra, which we've talked about before, they had that rocket that went kind of that weird kind of sideways launch, whatever.
Oh, and then It couldn't get enough thrust and it did the pee-pee dance in the air.
It did the Homer Simpson vanishing into the bushes dance.
Then they got a successful launch. I think they got one. Then they're testing today. And this is, when you want to talk about the irrationality of markets, go type in Astra stock into Google. And if you're doing this today, look at the drop right before 2 p.m.
All right, hold on. 2 p.m. today?
Yep.
Astra stock price. Oh, my God. Are you seeing this, Justin?
Yeah, that is that's what we like to call in the parlance of goofy.
It was a 10% drop, but it was a 10% drop.
But it's a very stark 10% drop.
it's everybody acting on things. So where's what happened? They're testing the rocket today, and you know you have computers that control your launch systems. They're testing the rocket. If you go to their website, you can watch the video feed, and all you see is a rocket sitting there. Literally, the computer aborted the launch because some sensor downrange said, "Hey, I think we have a problem. We're not going to launch right now."
And by the way, humans get to decide those rules in advance. You set up the if-thens of like, if this is out of tolerance, do not continue.
Yeah, you don't just let the computer decide, you know. Exactly. There's reasons we set this up. And so the computers can make those decisions in milliseconds. So far, it's all that happened. I think the launch window is still open, but people watching the stock were like,
Oh, wow.
I believe here in the United States, there was only like a 3-hour window or something. So it was one of those things where it's like, hey, now or never. And it's like, oh, this is out of range. We don't know why yet. You know, we're going to need 20 whole minutes to figure it out. So we'll do it next week or next whenever.
Yeah. So this may very much be some sort of algorithmic trading thing or something that may have happened. I'm just speculating here, but it is not, we are not an investment show. Do not take our investment seriously.
No.
This is merely, you know, jokey sort of thing. When I invested, I always sort of looked for companies that the market didn't understand in the short term.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not saying invest in Astra. I don't know enough about their fundamentals or whatever, but that was the sort of thing where, you know, like, oh, Apple announces a delay for this Mac. Oh, their stock just drove 20%. I'm like, literally, it's a 3-week delay. It's not going to, like, you'd be like, this is ridiculous. And so volatility is.
I was wondering when you were saying that, if there is just like a collection of, like, if you could just buy rocketry like a portfolio of rocketry stocks, like, because it seems like, I mean, obviously some of the biggest players like Blue Origin and SpaceX would not be in there, but you know, if you're buying rocketry companies, like, it's kind of like buying trains, you know, like back as they're kind of becoming like popularized.
I'm pretty sure trains are going to do okay. Yeah. I'm pretty sure markets
when governments are into spending a lot of money on them.
There, I would say yes, but I would say that some of these trains are being made by people who are really good at building trains, and some of these people are hype machines that know that people are excited about trains.
Oh, 100%.
And it's not too hard to figure that out. I'm not going to get in here and start trashing in particular sort of stocks, but there are some out there that get it, you know, that are, I'm like, oh, this is they're fully investors want them because they think they're next. Everybody wants like the next SpaceX. I'm like, these people aren't, they're using a technology. Like the average person investing in these rocket companies, by the way, doesn't understand the first thing about rockets or technology.
That, I mean, they probably don't understand the first thing about textiles or mining or computer engineering or internet ad sales.
But those would be things that there's enough history of successful companies and spaces to do that you could look at it, you could evaluate it, where you could say like, okay, if I want to invest in a textile company, oh, this person ran production over at DuPont and now they're here. Oh, okay. This person ran marketing at there. I'm like, not. Sure.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
And like, that's what the electric car companies is. Sometimes they'll get like, oh, we have this designer who works for this company who's helping us build, and this engineer. It's cool. Who's in charge of our factories? Who's building this? We watched, you know, one big electric car company just combust when it was all family members. The guy in charge of production used to lay tile like the year before he got hired because he was the brother of the CEO. Like, just this like, holy cow, like, this is a horrible way to run a company. And it was all on the surface. It was out there, but.
And then on top of that, and again, not a financial advice show.
No, but if you're gonna have $5,000, Brian, how would you invest it right now?
If I had a time machine?
Right now, it's not a financial advice show, but please remove $5,000 from your bank account and do whatever Brian says right now. Go.
Patreon.com/weirdthings, your number one source.
Correctamundo.
What always I find curious, this is me asking questions, not giving advice, is when one company has a bad day or something weird happens and seemingly totally unaffiliated other companies all tank, like the market takes a dive because one company has a bad day. Like, those are days like,
not a specific example, but like a meta example.
Okay. Well, fine. I didn't mean to segue directly to the meta situation.
Yeah.
But like, all of a sudden, all of tech stocks have taken a dive because Meta announces that they're having a bit of trouble. You know more about this than I do.
Well, yeah, I mean, Meta announced two very troubling things. Number one, they had missed their ad expectation by about $10 billion. And then also they had seen for the first time in their history a decline in monthly active users that sent their stock plummeting and then also affected all ancillary tech stocks.
Like the S&P 500 had a pretty awful day as a result.
Yeah, and there are people for whom are more financial experts that would probably have a more specific example with this than I do. But I think between herd mentality and how much of trading, especially when you have big swings, are triggered by automatic things, that you wind up just getting momentum in sectors that it's like, oh, okay, well, this certain
mutual
fund or something like that is like, okay, well, if it's hitting this kind of free fall, we're not waiting for somebody to be at the switch to hit the button. We're having an automatic sell order at any kind of volatility.
Right.
We'll buy it back later if we need to. So I think that's where some of this comes from. And then all these things are sort of tied together. And then there's also just the general fear. All the companies that were also affected were largely internet ad sales based. Well, and so it's like,
to your point, I just want to make a kind of funny point. So why did Facebook have this big drop?
Because they kept saying, we're going to get hit by a train if Apple cripples our ad sales. Right. Apple shouldn't be crippling our ad sales. I swear to God, if they cripple our ad sales, we're going to get hit by a train. It's going to really hurt us. And then it happened.
Hello, it's me, the train. Just to remind you guys, it's not that I'm out to kill Facebook. It's just I ask a question. Would you like to be tracked? Check yes or no.
Okay, so the train, its stock dropped too. Yeah, like, that's the thing that was amazing. Was like you watch the Facebook drop, and then Apple. I'm like, wait, no, like this is Apple just showed their product as it works. Like this is, we've created a better experience for you. How good is your experience? Facebook just lost $250 billion.
Yeah,
you're welcome, everybody in value.
Yeah, I mean, and that it shows you how much, like to your point, Andrew, that a lot of people that are buying and selling these things don't exactly know. Yeah, they're like, well, oh, tech's down. All tech is the same. Sell out of tech. It's all flim flam.
Like, wait. Did I hear you right? Did you say beep boop? Get this MFR out of my house.
Yeah.
Get out of here.
But, yeah. And that's fascinating. I mean, I think it's interesting that, you know, Google released their quarterly earnings and they had a great quarter. Like, so internet ad sales are not down. Facebook's methods by which they sell internet ads seems to have been hurt. And to their point, number one, not only did they hurt themselves post Cambridge Analytica because of public pressure by taking out tools that made it more effective for people to reach their people on their platform,
highly targeted.
Also, they laid out the exact narrative and screamed and yelled and took out gigantic full page ads to be like, we're going to get killed by this thing. It happened. Well, they did.
But then remember, then they said, oh, you know what? We look, because they realized advertisers were being, I assume, presumably advertisers are being scared off. So then they said, you know what? It's not going to be big of an impact. We have AI stuff. We have made ways to work around it. Because the other part of like the ad sales people or whatever were like, hey, like we need to sell these things and you can't say this is going to hit us. So if you look, there was like Facebook says won't be as big of an impact. And I think that was what set them up, was the idea that, you know, Wall Street hates unpredictability. And when they are getting two messages.
Yeah.
Let me see if I can find that headline.
Yeah. I mean, from my perspective, I do, I mean, not to make this a tech show, but like, I think Facebook, these are legit problems. These are core issues for which, like, Facebook's profit center, the goose that lays the golden egg for Google and Facebook are ad sales. They no matter what they tell you, no matter what they're saying, no matter what they're pivoting toward or what they really want to do and how many different shell companies they put above what they do, they are advertising companies. And so for Google, they've got a strong engine that continues to endure. People search for things. The search results will have ads on top of it. That continues to do well for them. People still search on Google. For Facebook, you know, they are dependent on keeping people in a walled garden and then giving advertisers unparalleled access to them. That was always what they had over everybody else on the planet. If that is hurt, then I think that is the center of their power. I think to assume that they will generate stuff that will make up for that just leaves a lot of uncertainty in front of them.
Part of the problem they had too was the losses, like Oculus has been like VR and experiences have been like an $8 billion loss for them.
Yeah.
And so the idea of the future stuff for them was being way more costly than they expected.
Well, and it's such a curious animal because I have experienced Facebook as a consumer, as somebody who got tricked into converting my private account to a public account and then regretted it because they changed all the rules again and then got tricked again by moving it to another type of account and got, I felt suckered into paying for targeted ad sales, which did manifest increased sales for my little online store. Unfortunately, their algorithms are so good that whatever I paid to Facebook ended up being the exact amount of increased churn. Like, I mean, it's like, all of a sudden I realized like, oh wait, that's their job. Is if I'm in middle management at a bigger company, I can promise greater overall revenues by shoveling, you know, coal into this engine. And it doesn't matter that I'm not actually making any more money because I get to point to all the new revenue that I'm doing. But as a small business, it was highly frustrating to figure out like campaign after campaign. It was just, it just all ended up being exactly the same.
Without getting into it, there were two friends of ours that were doing sponsored content.
Yes.
And our two friends were told by the company that puts on the sponsored content that it literally didn't matter how good or bad the sponsored content was because the client only cared about the numbers that would happen on Facebook. And when the two friends of ours who had internet followings were like, hey, do you want us to make sure that we direct our people to it so we can get that social proof? They laughed and said, don't worry, we'll just be able to buy enough Facebook ads to generate the exact number that we are telling them are going to see it, whether or not they are organic or relevant people. Like
that, that was an enlightening moment for our two friends.
Two friends who, yeah, it just shows you what you know, Facebook has a pay-for-play system that I think, also there's the fact that I think, you know, the other big headline for Facebook was that they dropped for the first time in monthly active users. And that to me is the fact that they are paying a price for the fact that their product has sucked for a while and hasn't been fun or interesting and has maximized ugly, divisive conversation, which has now become their brand.
I sent you, both of you, an email, which is in a CNBC article from March of last year. You want to...
Yeah, give me 1 second to call it up. Can you read us through it?
Zuckerberg, Facebook may be stronger after Apple privacy changes. Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg on Thursday said he's confident that the social media company will be able to manage through Apple's upcoming privacy changes. He explained that the change could benefit Facebook if more businesses decide to sell goods directly through Facebook and Instagram. Facebook is prepared for the looming Apple changes by introducing more commerce products. Look, they are an internet ad sales company. And the more that they try to do, and look, I think while on one side you can look at the billions of dollars that were invested in AR and VR for them, I think that there is a reasonable expectation of optimism that the I guess now Meta 3, or maybe they'll fully rebrand it, but whatever is like the Oculus Quest, what we assumed would be the Oculus Quest 3, could be a Nintendo Switch level or console level
game changer
sales juggernaut for them. It could be a breakthrough device, the likes of which we have never seen for VR. If you just look at that, the kind of adoption that the Quest 2 has had over the last few months, but like, you know, even then you're hoping these kind of trends and nothing else leapfrogs you.
The challenge is going to be, and there's a path where Facebook plays a really good positive part in my future and being able to use their products and stuff. And they do the things that I like that they do that I hope kind of that's where we end up on. And every company is going to be complicated. The challenge for them is, they're not really, outside of ad tech, they're not a developer's platform. They did a period where you could develop Facebook games and stuff, and the developers felt like they kind of ended up getting screwed over with how that worked out. And then trying to develop for Oculus is, you know, you get companies that are spending and doing some good titles for the Quest, but there is a hesitation outside of anything beyond games or trying to do other stuff, because ultimately it is a platform that, you know, you either get things like phones where, you know, you build an app and you get to run it and you get to a point where you get a mature ecosystem where Apple doesn't feel threatened by just about any app on there, short of you trying to create another app store, or you get into a tightly restricted place where these are what you're allowed to have in there. And if you want to build the metaverse and have this very open space, that's going to be a challenge when
Well, Justin and I were talking about this during lunch right before the show. You know, it's like ultimately their big problem is hell is other people, and how quickly VR chat became the place for the Ugandan knuckles environment or whatever. And it's like, how do you create, how do you build it so that people come? You know, it's tough.
I have a theory, but also you see, they announced their latest thing for the Quest is, remember we talked about the shield, like I don't know if they improved the features or whatever, but like people can't come near you, like they can't touch you or whatever. And it's like this weird, like, who are your beta users? Like, what is going on here? And I think about, like, you know, how are you? What kind of environment are you encouraging where people are going to be so crazy and weird and stuff? And also, is the right response is like, well, I'm just going to create systems where it's just people I know and I interact with, or just don't care? I don't know.
And I think what happens is you encounter the exact same cultural problems that you have in real life. Like, how do you make, there's a difference. Like, you and I both watch a lot of Defunct Land. It was really interesting watching the one about the Six Flags Astroworld, because I lived in Houston and I have very, very fond memories of Astroworld being a very special place. But what happened was, as they tried to squeeze a profit out of it, they increasingly made it cheaper and cheaper to go on Friday nights. They cut corners on security. And so as a result, it became the Astroworld, what was the coolest park in town within 200 miles, became the scary place you wouldn't dare go on Friday nights. And likewise, whereas Disney in general has done a very good job of preserving a very safe culture. I ain't never been scared to go to any of the Disney properties or whatever. So I think that Facebook faces that exact same dilemma just in the virtual space.
I think the fact that they have done nothing to earn trust with users or developers or partners, they have done nothing but sell everybody out the second that it benefited them. That's a rough thing to get over.
I have one more Rocket story, which was Scott Manley, who's the does his YouTube show. Wonderful, wonderful YouTuber about all things space. He brought this up. You know, a space company we haven't talked about is ABL.
ABL?
Like, oh, yeah. Yeah, that was my reaction. ABL Space Systems, very under the radar, but they've got some very high profile funding. And they really kind of made people aware of them with a bit of a bang a couple weeks ago, because there was a big, weird, smoky cloud over the Mojave Desert where they had been testing a rocket engine, and apparently it exploded. And again, par for the course, these things are hard. But if there was like Mojave, you know, the spaceport, there was this big cloud. And it's funny because you could see it near, like, they have that airplane graveyard. And so you see all those different airplanes there, and you see the smoke cloud going up there. And so that's when people are like, who, what, ABL, who are they? Like, yep, they're another company that's working on building, next generation rocket systems based out of El Segundo, down here in LA. So, you know, another group of people that just been quietly working away on trying to build, you know, advanced rocket systems.
There's sort of this remarkable moment when something that, you know, that past you would find very extraordinary and current you lives in a world where it's not extraordinary. Like, first it was, UFOs in the 1950s when there were a lot of military craft being tried out. More recently, as SpaceX put up a bunch of the Starlink satellites that would deploy in these strange, you know, lines, these perfect 5, 10, 15 point lines of reflective stars. And then now the latest one is, like, strange swirling lights spotted over in some place. And just glancing at it, before I even read the story, I knew, oh, this is something that still had fuel in it and was re-entering and just spun around in say the ionosphere or whatever. And you get the glowing spiral clouds, which seems so bizarre when we first read stories about military craft doing that 10 years ago. And now it's just whenever a SpaceX, like a fairing or whatever, has a bit of fuel in it, sometimes it'll do that.
Yeah, I think we get a lot of hype over, oh, there's a secret airplane here or secret aircraft. Oh, guys, check your email. Sorry. This just in.
Oh, this just in. Breaking news.
Anybody get this?
No, I just got an invitation to
mysterious aircraft spotted at Area 51.
An unprecedented satellite image.
So I think it was Planet Labs that one of their satellites had actually caught some footage over Area 51, and it appeared to be a structure where it hadn't been covered yet. And boom, there is an aircraft that looks remarkably a lot like one of the suggested prototype secret aircraft that like doesn't have like a tail, that uses like thrust and all that for it.
Huh.
So very sleek looking, very, very cool looking, a pretty big thing. Hard to know too, like the amount of stuff that gets tested now that's drones too. Like we've talked about this before. When people think of drones, they think of maybe quadcopters or large RC airplanes. Drones can be bigger than Cessnas. A drone can be any size, to be honest with you. So who knows? But yeah, this looks like confirmed one of them secret aeroplanes.
That's crazy. Yeah, it looks kind of like a stingray, although I guess more of like a delta, like a triangle shaped, but no tail. Like it really, yeah. I guess a spaceship. Really, it looks like a spaceship. Like
really does. Yeah.
There's some, if you go scroll down on the link I sent you, they show some different concept illustrations.
I was trying to do my best to just not say there's a Martian spaceship on Area 51.
Keep going. There we go.
Wow. Yeah. No, it I guess
it looks like a sleeker, cooler version of the stealth bomber.
Yeah.
Or the stealth.
No. Yeah. It looks like you were to say, make this spaceship look like the stealth bomber. And that's what it looks like. It has the sleeker kind of thing where like the end of the ship is the end of the wing.
Yeah. All right, last segment. This is a segment titled Things That I Mocked Brian Said That May Now Actually Become a Thing.
Oh, the pendulum, it swings both ways.
Go.
While back into the pandemic, we were talking about like face masks and stuff. And Brian mentioned like maybe one day we'll have like face masks that is like digital screens and stuff that just project stuff. And I don't think I said that would never happen. I think though that was like, man, that's really scary and dystopian. I'd be afraid if that happened. You know, the good folks at Razer feel otherwise. And if you go to Razer.com and check out their the Razer Zephyr, you can see they've got this Razer, you know, the people who make you PCs and gaming consoles, et cetera, have come out with their own like digital light up masks.
Yes. picture every stereotype of a gamer mask. This is exactly what it is.
So
it's great.
So is it okay? So on either side, it has the benefit of the respirators that you would see on like a painting mask or a gas mask or something, but in the center there is a digital screen of some kind.
No, actually this is early version. So the around the filters that lights up, that's a light, and it's hard to see here, that lights up your mouth.
Oh really?
So it's translucent plastic, so you can actually see somebody's
face. So you can see somebody's mouth. But I would imagine that this is airtight, unless you have a beard. And so you can get the benefit of respirated air, but people can see your mouth because it's glowing green like a Razer keyboard or mouse.
At the bottom, they have a simulator using a snap filter to show you what it looks like on a video.
Okay, future ready, insta-worthy. Insta-worthy, what a way to would position it. Basically, they're saying... Oh, that's crazy. So you can see what it looks like. I'll tell you what, man, there are certain human instincts, that are just hardwired into us, including the desire to see the intentions of other humans we meet.
I think the human intention to be shaped by the darkness,
yes.
Molded by it. Yeah, no, it's, You gotta be a specific kind of person to be rolling with that. Although, look, I mean, like, I guess to a certain extent, if you are very, very concerned about masking up, it is a cool way to look to have a respirator situation. So that's cool. What is the price tag on this thing? Do we know?
No.
Is it not on sale yet?
Well, here, I'm going to click on the buy button. We'll see what comes up here. It's $100, transparent RGB wearable air purifier with air filters. Real big. It gives a disclaimer. These are not N95s. I think it's probably pretty close.
You know, I wonder if you'd be allowed to go on a flight with this, because flights are very specific about not having vents. And this one definitely has two respirators on the side of it. So I don't know. It is very colorful. That's my review. Look at that. The colors on your face are there.
I mean, look, one of my favorite things about Dragon Con is that there is a structure in which it is totally appropriate to wear all kinds of crazy getups.
Oh, yeah.
We now have another structure in which you can wear some pretty crazy getups. And if you want to go out and meet people and be compliant with things and wear a crazy getup, I'm in favor of a little more crazy in the world, or wacky in the world. Wacky is better than crazy.
Do you think that on that that ad page, instead of saying Insta-worthy, they would like to say, it's a wacky, crazy getup?
I mean, if they want me to buy it, yeah.
Wacky, crazy getup for you and all your pallies.
I think that I'm scared by many aspects of the future.
I don't know. I'm kind of thrilled.
I don't know if I've ever looked at my mouse and said, I need that on my face.
That's what it is. It really is. It's a razor mouse.
Yeah.
But on your face.
I would really like that on my face real quick. I think everybody would be like, damn, that man's got a mouse face.
But most importantly, it lets people see you smile. And that matters.
An eerie green glow.
You can change the color, it looks like.
In an eerie RGB glow of your choice.
Yes.
Gentlemen, do you want any picks?
Yeah,
dude. I guess for a timely pick, I watched the first episode. I still have to watch the second episode of The Return of Raised by Wolves. Oh boy, that is a dense, hardcore sci-fi show. And they did a bit of reshuffling from season one to season two. Enemies become friends. Friends discover new enemies. It's out there, man. And it's heavy as ever, but I'm digging it. I was very thankful after episode one that I got to watch another episode of Gemstones to lighten the mood.
I will pick, well, two picks, but they go together. Number one, one of my favorite subreddits, r/obscuremedia. Just amazing people uploading random things from television and movie past. It is a amazing resource. One of my favorite things. And one of the gems that popped up yesterday was the 2002 failed Fox pilot for a sketch comedy show called Next, featuring a cast of Bob Odenkirk, Fred Armisen, Jerry Minor, Patton Oswalt, Brian Posehn, and it features a cameo from Ray Romano in this episode. The concept of the show is sketch comedy is boring. What if we switch to another sketch every 45 seconds? And so therefore we're just cutting sketches into three different phases and going to all of them throughout the show. But if you're looking at the talent that was coming right off Mr. Show, some of which that were about to explode in movies and SNL, like, this is prime talent. And some of the jokes are some of the sketch premises are really, really funny.
It's so bizarre that even as you describe it, given those names and their pedigree, it sounds bonkers. And then another part of my brain says, TikTok. He's describing TikTok.
You know, I mean, yes, except TikTok just gets out at 45 seconds. It's not like a bunch of 45-second sketches. It's like a 45-second sketch. And then, like, would you like to see a slightly different version of that joke? Because we're going to reset everything and just give you, like, one of the recurring sketches is an internet chat room meets in real life, or a forum meets in real life, a 2002 internet thing. And so they all have crazy screen names that don't exactly mean what you think they might mean, but some of them do. And it's various versions of that over and over and over again. So, but then again, it's worth watching if you like comedy.
I will do a throw out for kind of a one of the originators of that format. And I don't think I think it may predate them, but still is I've been watching some old Monty Python. And you go those old Monty Python skits and you look at how they wanted to break up the idea of what comedy was or sketches were and how that worked. The idea that, at its height with John Cleese and Graham Chapman and working together and not, feuding, there were just destroying conventions of what you expected. And the idea of like, oh, how do we end this sketch? Oh, a cop will walk on there and stop it and go too silly, too silly, too silly. You know, this idea, because they understood like, oh, you can have a funny premise, but you don't have a way out. We'll solve that problem. Which if you look at what problems Saturday Night Live still faces today, is they're trying to do.
It's so funny you mentioned that. So in an episode of the new Dana Carvey, David Spade thing, they're talking about that exact problem. And there was a recurring sketch where it was Adam Sandler and Robert Smigel, I believe, they were like Greek restaurant staff. And they're the catchphrase was like,
you like it, the Jews.
And so in one of those sketches, David Spade, as cast member David Spade, just walks on and says like, hey guys, can you just end this sketch? We get the idea. and the character's like, you want to end a sketch? Like, you want to go to the blonde guy with the guitar? You want to go to the blonde guy with the guitar? But David Spade was saying that was something that they were shocked they let them do, because SNL has an institutional a barrier to any kind of like fourth wall meta breaking kind of thing, which often leads them to do painfully crappy ending of sketches, because sketches are just so notoriously hard to end. They just kind of are painful.
Yeah, what if somebody like wanted to end a sketch by jumping out of a helicopter? Wait, do you think his co-hosts would mercilessly mock him for the remainder of the 5 minutes they were live on air?
Probably.
Okay.
I was watching, I'm trying to remember what show it was, and I don't know if it was Monty Python or something, but at one point there was a talking dog puppet, and I'm like, it was pre-Triumph.
Oh, damn.
Was it a Toons' The Driving Cat, where the bit always ended with them driving off a cliff?
Well, that would have been Smigel probably writing that. Yeah. No, this was pre like SNL. This was pre-Smigel SNL. This was like I'm like, oh, this is an interesting sort of Smigel's brilliant. But I was just like, oh wow, like I'm trying to, was it Python or something? I got to remember, like, I'm like, wow, that's curious. You know, like, you know, it was a similar like, dog talking like this. So picks. What is it?
I made mine.
So mine's Python. Netflix right now has Monty Python. Holy Grail, if you want to go back, watch that. It's great. It's brilliant. And that's a great example of they set up how it's going to end throughout, because as they're going on their crusade, the cops are investigating.
Yep.
You know what happened.
Wait, weren't you going to admit you were wrong about something?
The mask.
Yeah, the masks.
Oh, okay. The mask. Gotcha.
Brian and...
I postulated that such a thing might happen.
There we go. Yeah. There we go. Holy Grail, what a magnificent achievement. Just an amazing work of art. So good.
Yeah. Gentlemen, it's been weird.